Coming up this Sunday night, there's going to be a really great show at Ghostlight Coffee. M. Ross Perkins, our good buddy, is going to be opening up for the wonderful Ali Tadros. She is getting a lot of national recognition for her music, and I sat down with her earlier this week. We got to talking about how she got started and what she's doing these days. So we're going to hear a little bit of that conversation right now, followed by some of her music. This is Kaleidoscope on WISO. Tell me a little bit about how you got started playing. I was reading a little bit of your bio, and I understand you kind of had a moment where you decided, yes, this is what I want to do. Can you describe a little bit about how you got started?
Yeah, it's crazy because I did not grow up playing music at all. I didn't buy my first guitar until I was 18, and it's because I had a crush on a dude who played at an open mic, and I think I got kind of jealous. I sort of stumbled my way through learning how to play while I was traveling, when I was 18 and 19. When I was in college, I was studying Middle Eastern politics, and I was pretty unhappy. And I was actually really sort of inspired by a blog that I read that Tucker Max wrote. And he had talked about a girl who he knew had been diagnosed with a terminal illness, or malignant cancer, I guess. And before the diagnosis, she hated her life. She had a job she couldn't stand. She didn't travel, didn't like her friends. And then when she had no idea how long she had to live, she made a bunch of changes. Eventually, she beat the cancer, and she said that it was the best thing that ever happened to her. And in the article, he says, imagine being diagnosed with a terminal illness or malignant cancer. What would you do and what would you change? And when I read that, the first thing I thought was, well, I wouldn't be studying Middle Eastern politics. I was terribly depressed at the time. I wouldn't be in New York where I was at school in the freezing cold. I would be living in Austin, Texas. I'd be playing songs on Sixth Street, and I'd be doing volunteer work. And at that point in time, I'd never written my first song. And the next thing he said in the article was, well, why are you waiting for cancer? And that was my aha moment, the first moment that I realized I wanted to do music. And a few weeks later, I sort of accidentally wrote my first song. And as I was on the train headed back to school to take a final, I knew I was done. I skipped the final, and I started playing that summer.
I've been talking to a lot of musicians recently, and we've been talking about kind of that sometimes the easiest way to go is when you don't give yourself a plan B and you just go and you say you have to make this work. Is that kind of how you felt when you decided, okay, music is it?
Definitely. Yeah, I couldn't have a net. And every single time I tried to make a net for myself, it just, like, the universe didn't let it happen. You know, I would pick up a job on the side, and I would get gigs, you know, every single night at the exact time I was supposed to be working. But yeah, I've definitely put myself in the position many times where I had to figure out a way to make it work. We're resilient people, we usually do.
Going from, you know, that first song that you wrote, getting ready for a final, what's your writing process like now? Do you start off with lyrics? Do you just start off, you know, noodling around on the guitar? What's your process?
It's always different, but typically it's a combination of starting with the guitar or the melody, and then I play it by ear for the most part. So I'll find a guitar part that I like and just start singing a melody over it. And there's usually an intention or a feeling behind it, and lyrics start building, and I usually just try and stick with my instincts as much as I can. I'll get out as much of the song as I can and record a demo. And then I've gotten into the process of going for runs after I start recording demos, and I'll just start listening to the demo over and over, and then that's how the editing process goes. I'll get home after my run and start, pulling out my rhyming dictionary and trying to make sure that all the metaphors fit. You know, it's like it's almost like a piece of architecture or something. The foundation is always the melody and the guitar part and the metaphor, and then I just build from there.
And I know that you've been touring around quite a bit, doing a lot of traveling. Do you find that travel, being in, you know, different cities and countries and places, that has an influence on what you're writing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, just genre-wise, you know, the music that I'm surrounded by constantly, I'm sure on a subconscious level, has affected the style, whether I'm writing, you know, folky or country or stuff or, you know, weird Eastern Bloc type music. But, yeah, I was just in Canada for this crazy house concert tour. We toured Alberta and Saskatchewan for 2 weeks, and we played in a bunch of houses that didn't even have addresses. They were like GPS coordinates. And that like definitely informed this sort of solitude and quiet that came about my writing. It was very peaceful songs for change.
What is that like doing, you know, a house show or these really intimate small venues where, you know, you can be face to face with an audience member and kind of have that connection with people one on one? What's that experience like for you as a performer?
It's amazing. You learn so much about yourself in two different ways. First of all, especially when you're playing in somebody's house, because you're in their space, there's this inherent trust that's there. Like, you know, a lot of times they'll just let us in and they're not even the house yet, and, you know, they don't even know who we are. But typically, especially after we've played and we've put ourselves in this vulnerable position in their living room, they just open up to us, and, you know, we get to hear people's life stories so much of the time, and, you know, they'll tell us about their problems or their dreams or, you know, their families, and I feel like I've learned so much about life in those settings and people's living rooms after shows, you know, and like half of it is bourbon, the other half is just situational because, you know, we're in their space. And then, sometimes it can be a little exhausting because you get so invested in people, I guess, and it's every single day, you know. So it's every now and again I have to run away for a little while. I think that's why I run, to get some space.
Now, I know that kind of on the flip side of the super intimate house show, you've got a music video that's been getting a lot of attention. And I have to say, I love it. It's so charming. And just in reading your bio and listening to your music, it's like it seems just so fitting. Did you get to have a hand in sort of the crafting of the visual part of that story?
Oh yeah, yeah. I was super involved in the process, and it, we had a great team. I mean, it was such an indie video. I mean, like, the budget was pretty much non-existent. Almost everything in that video was donated. The girls in the video, the two little girls, I actually babysat, so I borrowed them for the shoot. And the concept came about because the bus that's in the graphics part of it broke down the morning of the shoot. And originally we were supposed to be driving around with the band in the bus playing the song, and we had to come up with an alternate version because we literally pushed it to a corner in Brooklyn in front of somebody's porch. We pulled up the green screen. We shot, you know, the sequence. And then we thought, okay, well, we have to come up with something, you know, something that has to do with a green screen and an adventure. And, yeah, we thought it was fun to make it a Reading Rainbow little girl's imagination kind of thing. The whole thing took like 6 or 7 months. The director was my neighbor, and he and I went back and forth almost daily, you know, working on that, on the animations and everything.
And what does the rest of the year look like? I saw that you're heading over to the UK in May. What are your plans for the summer? Continuing touring?
Yeah, I mean, I just wrapped up a West Coast tour. I've got a tour down to South by Southwest, and then I'll tour back up through the Midwest. Early summer, I'll probably go out to the West Coast again, and the plan is to shuffle back and forth between touring and recording the next album.
Is there anything else on the horizon that people should keep their eyes open for? Are you going to do another video for any of the songs on the Fits, or are you going to kind of roll with this one for a while for the video for Sweet on Me?
Well, we're definitely still pushing the Sweet on Me video, but yes, I actually just shot the second video yesterday, and I get to start editing tonight. I'm really excited. And we recorded a video for Bad Thing But I ended up actually changing the arrangements after we did the album. So it's an alternate version. We did a live video that we shot in Lower Manhattan, and I'm stoked about that. So I would advise people to keep an eye out for that video.
My conversation with Ali Tadros. She's playing at Ghostlight Coffee Sunday night, and Ross Perkins is opening. Advance tickets are available for that show, ghostlightcoffee.com, or we've got a link up on our Facebook page. We're at facebook.com/kaleidoscoperadio. I've also got a link up to the video for Sweet on Me. We're going to hear the audio version of that right now. This is Kaleidoscope on YSO.
A 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Thank you.